Good evening again tonight. Good to see you here. Thanks for coming. Each one that's made the effort to come this week, I've got to say that I have enjoyed the meetings. If you didn't, I did. Sorry. For whether you know it or not, I've had to spend a lot of time studying this. And I have certainly enjoyed what I have gleaned from the Word of God, and I trust God has used it to speak to our hearts. Now tonight, we're going to be looking at something that I find very difficult, first of all, to speak on, because it's very searching for my own soul. I think you'll see, I'm going to have to do a lot of reading, because we're going to jump up to chapter 44 tonight, and the last chapter was 41, so I've got to fill in some of the gaps in between. So we're going to start at chapter 42 in verse 5. Just so we fill in a little bit. 42 and verse 5. And the sons of Israel came to buy corn among those that came, for the famine was in the land of Canaan. And Joseph was the governor over all the land, and it was he that sold out to all the people of the land. And Joseph's brethren came and bowed down themselves before him with their faces to the earth. And Joseph saw his brethren, and he knew them. But he made himself strange unto them, and spake roughly unto them, and said unto them, Whence come ye? And they said, From the land of Canaan to buy food. And Joseph knew his brethren, but they knew him not. And listen to this. And Joseph remembered the dreams which he dreamed of them, and said unto them, Ye are spies, to see the nakedness of the land are ye come. And they said unto him, Nay, my lord, to buy food are thy servants come. We are all one man's sons. We are true men. Now they're telling that to the wrong person. We are true men. Let's see, verse 14. And Joseph said unto them, That is it I spake unto thee, saying, Ye are spies. Now here's what I want to speak on tonight. Hereby shall ye be proved. By the life of Pharaoh, ye shall not go forth hence, except your youngest brother come hither. Send one of you, and let him fetch your brother, and ye shall be kept in prison, that your words may be proved, whether there be any truth in you, or else by the life of Pharaoh, surely ye are spies. And he put them all together in ward 3 days. And Joseph said unto them the third day, This do, and live, for I fear God. If ye be true men, let one of your brethren be bound in the house of your prison. Go ye, carry corn for the famine of your houses. And bring your youngest brother unto me, so shall your words be verified, and ye shall not die. And they did so. And they said one to another, We are verily guilty concerning our brother, in that we saw the anguish of his soul when he besought us, and we would not hear. Therefore is this distress come upon us. And Reuben answered them, saying, Spake I not unto you, saying, Do not sin against the child, and ye would not hear? Therefore, behold, also his blood is required. And they knew not that Joseph understood them, for he spake unto them by an interpreter. Okay? I needed to read that part because I want to speak on testing tonight. And that's what Joseph is about to do with these boys. He's going to prove them. He's going to test them. And he's going to bring them right to the brink of where they can take no more. Right to the very edge. Because he's going to test them right to the core to see what's really in them. Now, chapter 43. Verse 6. And Israel said, Wherefore dealt ye so ill with me as to tell the man whether ye had yet a brother? And they said, Now you're going to get a different story here, because oftentimes things are condensed in the scriptures, not contrary, but we're getting the whole picture now. And they said, The man asked us straitly of our state and of our kindred, saying, Is your father yet alive? Now, the boys should have clued in a little bit here when they got these questions. Is your father yet alive? Have ye another brother? Now, what would make him ask that? Only if he was trying to get the truth out of them, to see if they would tell the truth. And we told them according to the tenor of these words. Could we certainly know that he would say, Bring your brother down? And Judah said unto Israel his father, Send the lad with me, and we will arise and go, that we may live and not die, both we and thou, and also our little ones. I will be surety for him, and of my hand thou shalt require him. If I bring him not unto thee, and set him before thee, then let me bear the blame forever. And so, we're going to skip down the chapter. Verse 15, And the men took that present, and they took double their money in their hand, and Benjamin, and rose up, and went down to Egypt, and stood before Joseph. And when Joseph saw Benjamin with them, he said to the ruler of his house, Bring these men home, and slay and make ready, for these men shall dine with me at noon. And the man did as Joseph bade, and the man brought the men into Joseph's house. And the men were afraid, because they were brought into Joseph's house. And they said, Because of the money that was returned in our sacks at the first time are we brought in, that he may seek occasion against us, and fall upon us, and take us for bondmen and our asses. And they came near to the steward of Joseph's house, and they communed with him at the door of the house, and said, O sir, and they try to explain their way out of this. Verse 23, And he said, Peace be to you, fear not. Your God and the God of your father hath given you treasure in your sacks. I had your money. And he brought Simeon out to them. And the man brought the men into Joseph's house and gave them water, and they washed their feet, and he gave their asses provender. And they made ready the present against Joseph came at noon, for they heard that they should eat bread there. And when Joseph came home, they brought him the present which was in their hand into the house, and bowed themselves to him to the earth. And he asked them of their welfare, and said, Is your father well, the old man of whom you spake? Is he yet alive? And they answered, Thy servant our father is in good health. He is yet alive. And they bowed down their heads and made obeisance. And he lifted up his eyes and saw his brother Benjamin, his mother's son, and said, Is this your younger brother of whom you spake unto me? And he said, God be gracious unto thee, my son. Now down to verse 32, And they set on for him by himself, and for them by themselves, for the Egyptians which did eat with him by themselves, because the Egyptians might not eat bread with the Hebrews, for it is an abomination unto the Egyptians. And they sat before him, the firstborn, according to his birthright, and the youngest according to his youth. And the men marveled one at another. Now they should have been cluing in by this time, but they're not. And he took and sent messes unto them from before him. But Benjamin's mess was five times so much as theirs, and they drank and were merry with him. Verse 1 of chapter 44, and he commanded the steward of his house, saying, fill the men's sacks with food as much as they can carry, and put every man's money in his sack's mouth, and put my cup, the silver cup, in the sack's mouth of the youngest, and his corn money. And he did according to the word that Joseph had spoken. As soon as the morning was light, the men were sent away, they and their asses. And when they were gone out of the city, and not yet far off, Joseph sent unto his steward, said unto his steward, follow after the men. And when thou dost overtake them, say unto them, wherefore have ye rewarded evil for good? Is not this it in which my Lord drinketh, and whereby indeed he divineth, or maketh trial? That's what we're talking about tonight, testing. Ye have done evil in so doing. And he overtook them, and he spake unto them these same words. And they said unto him, wherefore saith my Lord these words? God forbid that thy servants should do according to this thing. Behold, the money which we found in our sack's mouth we brought again unto thee out of the land of Canaan. How then should we steal out of thy Lord's house silver or gold? With whomsoever thy servant it be found, both let him die, and we also will be my Lord's bondsmen. They were pretty sure. And he said, now also let it be according to your words. He with whom it is found shall be my servant, and ye shall be blameless. Then they speedily took down every man his sack to the ground, and opened every man his sack. And he searched, and began at the eldest, and left at the youngest, and the cup was found in Benjamin's sack. Then they rent their clothes, and laid at every man his ass, and returned to the city. Now Judah's going to step forward. Verse 18, then Judah came near unto him and said, O my Lord, let thy servant, I pray thee, speak a word in my Lord's ears, and let not thine anger burn against thy servant, for thou wast even as Pharaoh. My Lord asked his servant, saying, have ye a father or a brother? And we said unto the Lord, we have a father, an old man, and a child of his old age, a little one. And his brother is dead, and he alone is left of his mother, and his father loveth him. Thou saidst unto thy servants, bring him down unto me, that I may set mine eyes upon him. And we said unto my Lord, the lad cannot leave his father, for if he should leave his father would die. Thou saidst unto thy servants, except your younger brother come down with you, ye shall see my face no more. You know the story. Verse 30. Now therefore, when I come to thy servant my father, and the lad be not with us, seeing that his life is bound up in the lad's life, it shall come to pass, when he seeth the lad is not with us, that he will die. And thy servants shall bring down the gray hairs of thy servant our father with sorrow to the grave. For thy servant, Judah, became surety for the lad unto my father, saying, if I bring him not unto thee, then I shall bear the blame to my father forever. Now therefore, I pray thee, let thy servant abide instead of the lad, a bondman to my Lord. And let the lad go up with his brethren. For how shall I go up to my father, and the lad be not with me? Lest peradventure I see the evil that shall come on my father. Then Joseph could not refrain himself before them that stood by, and cried, cause every man to go out from thee. And there stood no man with him, while Joseph made himself known unto his brethren. And he wept aloud, and the Egyptians and the house of Pharaoh heard. And Joseph said unto his brethren, I am Joseph. Doth my father yet live? And his brethren could not answer him, for they were troubled at his presence. And Joseph said unto them, unto his brethren, Come near to me, I pray you. And they came near. And he said, I am Joseph, your brother, whom ye sold into Egypt. Now therefore be not grieved nor angry with yourselves that ye sold me hither, for God did send me before you to preserve life. For these 2 years hath the famine been in the land, and yet there are 5 years in which there shall be neither earing nor harvest. And God sent me before you to preserve you a posterity in the earth, and to save your lives by great deliverance. So now it was not you that sent me hither, but God. And he hath made me a father to Pharaoh, and lord of all his house, and a ruler throughout all the land of Egypt. Now, you know the rest of the story, but I needed to read that much and trust the Lord will bless his word. I don't know where to start with this, because there's so many directions you could go, and you know that too. But I do want to talk about testing. Because we're all tested. And there's older ones here that have gone through more testing than I have gone through. And my days of testing aren't over yet. We're all being tested. God is always proving us. And Joseph, in this case, was testing his brothers. But he didn't know that at the same time, God was testing him. Let me just say right at the beginning, oftentimes we don't know what's going on in the test. And what you might think is a trial that you're going through might even be a test for somebody else. And what somebody else is going through might be a test for you. You say, well, how is that? To see what we do with somebody else when they're going through a test. God has gathered us together in assembly fellowship. Now, this is one of the reasons of assembly fellowship. The world has it all wrong. The world goes to church. That's not God's intention. I'm not casting stones. I'm just telling you, that is not a scriptural concept, going to church. God's gathering center is the people are the church. He unites them together in Christ. He draws them together. He gathers them. And I'm not going to speak on that tonight, but that's another whole subject. He gathers them. Now, one of the reasons why God gathers people together is because he uses them in that corporate capacity. So that when one member suffers, all the others are there with that one member. That's taught very clearly in the New Testament. And it's taught with the example of the human body. That if one member suffer, all the other members suffer with it together. And that's in the local setting. So that when God is testing one member, he is actually testing every other member of that company. Because while they might be going through a deep trial, you be careful how you talk about them. Because God's trying to prove you to see if you're true to that brother, to that sister. And when God is testing you, he's also testing them. See? So Joseph is testing his brothers, but at the exact same time, God is testing Joseph. How Joseph is going to handle this. You see, there were several points in the reading tonight where Joseph could have said, I told you so. Where Joseph could have said, you brought this on yourselves. Where Joseph could have blamed them. Where Joseph could have said, revenge is mine. I'm going to give these boys what they deserve. Okay? So in bringing the brothers face to face with Joseph, after 22 years, God is testing Joseph while Joseph is testing them. So we're all going through testing. Now, when you're in school, testing is to see if you're smart or dumb. Right? That's what a test is all about. To see if you know the stuff. If you got it all in your head or not. And so many a kid gets through school like this. They cram before the exam. They quickly get it all stuck in their minds, short-term memory. Quickly write the exam and then totally forget about it. It has changed nothing. They passed the test, but they really didn't learn anything. It hasn't changed their life. Now, that's not what God's tests are about. He's not trying to see if we know the right answers. He's not looking for how much knowledge we have. And it's not about passing or failing. That's not what testing is about. God tests us to make us. If you're not tested, if your faith is never tested, you won't even know what you are yourself. You will not be able to stand. Through testing, we grow. Through testing, God is building character in us. Through testing, He is proving what we really are. That's what God is doing. So if you feel that you have, this isn't even the right word, but I don't know how else to say it. You have failed before. Okay? You failed the test. It's not about failing. Get yourself up again and keep going. Learn from what you've done wrong. That's part of the test. Learn from the experience and go on. Because God is constantly testing us. Mervyn Paul wrote the book, Training for Reigning. That's life. Life is the testing grounds, the proving grounds. Not to destroy us, but to improve us. A few years ago, I was in Jackson, Michigan. And this is when the car companies were doing good. Okay? And I went out to Chrysler's proving grounds because one of the boys in the assembly worked on the proving grounds. You know what his job was to do? To drive cars on a 5-mile track that had every kind of road pavement and hill and valley and corners and wet roads and slippery roads and oil slick roads and bumpy roads. And he was to drive the car with all this equipment, testing it. For what? To see if they could smash up the car? To see if they could ruin the car? No. To determine the quality of the car. To prove that it could stand. And they put them through torturous tests. I went with him. Okay? But he couldn't drive the same with me in the car as he could testing the car. We came to one section of the road where the two sides of the car, so one set of tires went on this track and the other set of the tires went on this track. Okay? When this one was up, this one was down. So the wheels were going like this. And he was supposed to drive 50 miles an hour down that road. Okay? Now, we only got to 25 miles an hour, and I could hardly hang on. I could hardly stay in my seat. I thought the car was going to tip right over. And I said, do you really get it up to 50? Oh, yeah. Yeah. He said, I have to set the cruise control on 50 and drive the whole track at 50 miles an hour all day long. All day long, just going and going and going and going. And then they take the car when it's rattled to pieces, just shook to pieces. They take the car and they go over it to see even if what nuts break, what bolts break, what shocks break, what holes, what springs. The whole car has gone over. And then what do? They improve every broken part. They learn from the mistakes and they keep on going. That's a proving ground. That's testing. You see what Joseph said? He's going to prove them. He's going to prove whether these are true men. God likes to prove us. For what? Just to mess up our lives? Just to interfere with our lives? No. For your own good. For our own good. To build our own confidence. To build up our own faith. To build our confidence and trust in Him. To make us true disciples. To make us true men and women for God. That's what it's all about. So in all our trials, in all our difficulties, even in the best of days, it's all to prove us, to test us. Now, you'll notice that these men didn't realize that they were going through a test. They didn't know what Joseph was doing. They didn't know Joseph. They didn't recognize him. We were talking in the home, why did Joseph know them? Joseph was away from them just as long as they were away from Joseph. How come Joseph recognized them and they didn't recognize Joseph? Well, you got a parallel portion in Luke chapter 22. Their eyes were holden that they should not know him. But you also got something else. The last time they saw Joseph, he was a scruffy boy of 17, just starting to grow a beard like every Jewish boy should. Okay? So just a little bit of a scruffy fuzz on his face. That's the last time they saw him. All these men have full beards, like every Israelite had. Joseph? He's an Egyptian now. He looks just like the Egyptians. Go ahead, young people, Google it. Look it up in your history books. Every ruler in Egypt not only shaved their face, but shaved their head. Completely shaved. Remember when Joseph was brought up out of the prison? What's the first thing he did? He shaved himself and stood before Pharaoh. So they're looking, and we'll look at this in a minute, they're looking at a 40-year-old man, completely shaved. And there are all these bearded boys. Now he recognized them, but they didn't recognize him. And while they think, you know, they're just bowing before a ruler, Joseph is planning to prove them. First of all, his speech. He's proving them with speech. That's a simple test that he's putting them through. Whether ye be true men. Now, these men come right out and say, we are true men. But he happens to know of things in their past that they're not facing up to. They could have said, you know, we're not the best men in the world, and we have done dishonest things before, but we really didn't steal that cup. Then they would have been true men. But they completely gloss over their past. And they say, no, no, we're true men. We are true men. They're not going to come clean until he throws them into prison. The test gets a little harder. Now, all this while, he's acting like an Egyptian. Joseph is. He's this bare-faced, bald-headed ruler that's standing before them, speaking Arabic or Egyptian, Coptic, while they're speaking Hebrew. And he never let on that he understood a word they're saying. And the steward of his house, that's who I would take it to be, speaks to them in Hebrew. And Joseph uses him as an interpreter. So the steward knows what they're saying, and Joseph knows what they're saying, but they don't know that Joseph knows what they're saying. And when they get in prison, then the truth comes out. They begin to talk among themselves. It's because of what we did to Joseph. When we saw the anguish of his soul, Joseph listening to the whole thing. And that lets Joseph in on something. That his test is working. They're taking it right. He's not being cruel to them. He's testing them right to the core. It's all coming clear now. But lest I get ahead of myself, there's a couple of things I want you to know about testing. You remember when they dined, he makes himself, he gives hints, let's put it that way. He gives hints as to who he is. And again, just to see if they're aware of anything here. They bow down before him, and Joseph remembers the dream. Did they remember the dream? Doesn't seem like they did. They bow down again. Joseph remembers a dream. Every time they bow down, Joseph is remembering, God is fulfilling his dream, this prophecy right in front of my eyes. And he's wondering, don't they get it? How hard are these men? Don't they see what they're doing? They didn't get it. So he has them eat with him. And he sets them at their table in order. Reuben at the head of the table, all the way down around the table, and all the way around till he comes to Benjamin. And the men look at one another and say, how did he know? Who is this? That's what they should have been asking. Who is this man? How did he know? And then he sends from the main table over to their table their dinners. And when it comes to Benjamin, who was the only innocent, true man at the table, he sends over five times as much. And they look. And it had to reach, you would think for sure, this reached their consciences. This reached them. This finally got through. That something is going on here. If they didn't realize that Joseph was testing them, surely you would think they realize, okay, I don't want to fail this. God is testing us. It's so clear now. Because they knew, all those boys around that table, except one, all those men knew about Joseph and what they did. And there was only one boy, one man at that table that did not know about Joseph. That was Benjamin. And he happens to be the one that's treated royally. It must have bothered their conscience, at least. Now, the reason I'm telling you all this is God doesn't tell us when he's going to test us. He doesn't send you a notice, okay, get ready, you're going into the exam now. But all along the way, if we're exercised about it, if we don't just shrug it off and say, well, that's life, if we really understand that everything that happens in a believer's life happens by the knowledge of God. Now, he doesn't set it up all the time, but God always has his hand in it. And if we take it that way, then there are things that we can see so that we can be exercised to say, I'm not going to fail. I won't let him down. Like Job. Though he slay me, yet will I trust him. There was enough going on in his life that Job realized, even though it seemed like he could not get through to heaven, he realized this, my Redeemer lives. I serve a living God. He's hedged up my way. Job knew that. But there was enough happening in Job's life to let him know that he was not alone. God saw it all. And the man behaved himself wisely. Now, whenever we're brought to trial, we can do one or two things. We can shrug it off and say, that's life. Or we can bow our head and say, Lord, help me through this to honor you. All the way through it. And to learn what lessons I need to learn. Now, sometimes in a trial, you pay a big price. So it should be our attitude, Lord, I'm paying a big price here. I want to learn all there is for me to learn in this trial. Instead of self-pity, which often we're guilty of, and I'm including me in that 1,000%, instead of self-pity and questions like, why me, why now, why this, instead of that, it should be, why not me? I've seen it in others. Help me to learn all that I should learn in this trial. Listen to what we read. When the morning was come, the boys saddled up their donkeys and headed out. Now here's what it says. When they were not very far. That's the first thing I want you to notice. You're not going to get very far in Christian experience before testing comes. They're thinking they're home free. Simeon has been released from prison. They brought Benjamin down. Joseph saw Benjamin. They figured they convinced Joseph that they're true men. They're not spies. The whole 11 of them are going home and they're not very far along the road. But you see, the whole thing was set up. Unknown to them, but known to Joseph, there was a whole big test being set up behind the scenes. They didn't know that. They had no warning of it. That's one of the things we need to face and to learn when it comes to testing. That He knows. And oftentimes He sets it up. And we're going merrily down the road and think, can you imagine them when all of a sudden they saw this man chasing them? Whoa, stop, stop, stop. Where'd he come from? What's going on? It's all a surprise to them. But it was no surprise. We need to understand that. What might take us as an accident, a shocking experience, it's no surprise. No surprise to the Lord. Remember, it's the Lord of the land that set this whole thing up. Nothing takes Him by surprise. Nothing is a shock to Him. He saw the whole thing before it even happened. And He wants to see how they're going to react in it. Now, one of the hardest trials that a person can face is to be blamed for something you didn't do. That's hard to take. So not very far along. Follow after them, the steward is told. Follow after them. So you're not going to go very far, but there's always going to be something following after you. Always. That's what we've got to remember. There are others following us. And they're watching how we handle life. Life's trials. That's one of the good things about the assembly. Brother, let me encourage you if you're going through trial. You might not know it, but you might be the inspiration, if I can use that word, for another brother in that assembly because he's watching you. He's following you. And he's watching you go through a big trial. And he's going through a little one. And by the way, you're handling that. That gives him strength. There's others following. There's others watching. Follow after him. Sister, the way you handle it could be a tremendous encouragement to the other sisters on how to handle it. There's others following. None of us live to ourselves. All of us are what Cain wanted to shrug out from. Am I my brother's keeper? Who made me my brother's keeper? God did. Follow after them. Overtake them. A lot of times that's the way a trial comes. We think we're going the right way through no fault of our own. You can examine your steps. You can say, like the two on the Emmaus Road again, we thought. And you can examine your steps and say, I thought I was in the will of the Lord. I thought, and this just overtakes you. Yes. That's the way they often come. Right out of the blue, as far as you're concerned, to overtake you. Don't go down. That's the way trials work. They overtake us. And then the questions start. Question them right to the core. Push these men to the brink, Joseph said. Question their honesty. Question their integrity. Question their motives. Push them right to the edge. Why? I want to see what these men are made out of. I want to see if God has done a work in their soul. That's what Joseph was looking for. If God had brought about a change in these men's lives in the 22 years that they've been apart. That's what he's looking for. Listen, that's what God is looking for in us. He's not out to break us. He's not out to destroy us. He wants to see in the 5 years since you've been saved, in the 10 years, in the 20 years, in the 30 years, in the 40 years since you've been saved, if the grace of God has wrought a change in your life. That's what he's looking for. Just to see what the grace of God has done in your life. So maybe 10 years ago, you'd have exploded at such an overtaking trial. How are you handling it now? That's what he wants to say. You remember, this is just a little picture, but you remember the Lord said to Peter in his boat. Now, this wasn't a trial, but it was a test. Peter pushed out a little bit from land. He started with Peter with just a little push. Just a little push. And after Peter pushed out a little bit, later on in the day, he said, now launch out into the deep. There's a principle there. And one of them, as refers to trials, as implies to trials, is this. God won't give us more than we can bear. But as you mature in your Christian life, the trials are not going to get less. They're going to get greater. But you'll be able to handle them. He still will not try you above that which you're able to bear. He still will always make a way out by grace. But the trials are going to continue. The Lord Jesus said it in John chapter 15. You would have thought he would have said, Every branch he prunes that it might bring forth fruit. And those that don't bring forth fruit, he prunes them a little more. That's not what he said. He said, those that bring forth fruit, he prunes them more. Why? That they might bring forth more fruit. So, trials are a very real thing in the life of every believer. Now, one of the things we learn from these boys not to do. Don't try to stand a trial in the energy of the flesh. You can't do it. And one of the first clues that you're acting in the energy of the flesh is you start to run off at the mouth. That's what these boys started doing. And they start to declare their innocence and defend themselves and make rash vows. Let the man who has this die and we'll all become bondservants. That's just spewing off in the energy of the flesh. And I think I would be the first one to hang my head in shame. Because before you stop to think that this could be a trial from the Lord, it's almost natural to speak before you think. And that's the flesh. You can't stand in the energy of the flesh. You can't live as a believer in the energy of the flesh. And one of the reasons for testing is so that we learn to live by the Spirit and not by the flesh. So that we learn to depend on the Spirit and not to depend on the flesh. So that we lean upon the Lord and not lean upon the arm of the flesh. And here's men, and when the test comes and the trial comes, what do? They make these rash statements and vows and declare their innocence. But do you hear what they were accused of? Why have ye repaid evil for good? They declare, we have not. Oh, yes, they have. Maybe not just right now. They didn't steal this Joseph's silver cup, but they did take Joseph's coat of many colors. Same man. They did take from Joseph a God-given thing. They were trying to say of Joseph, he is not the one that's firstborn. He does not have the spiritual right of firstborn. And do you remember the circumstances when they took that coat from Joseph? Jacob had sent Joseph to find his brothers. And I take it this way anyway, because it's verse next to each other. They take Joseph. He's just come from home. I take it that Joseph brought them food, supplies. Because they throw Joseph in the pit and they sat down and ate bread together. Where'd they get the bread? They've been out in Shechem and Dothan for a long time. Where'd they get the bread? Joseph brought it. He comes to bring them good. What did they do? They repaid good with evil. So now they're denying it. No. Right now they didn't. But think back a little bit. Just go back in your mind. And the circumstance you're going through right now might not be because of something you've done wrong. Oftentimes it's not about what we've done wrong. It might even be because of something we've done right. But none of us are guiltless. None of us. And rather than think back, these men, what do? They rend their clothes. And they go back and they say, we're going to have to be his servants. And they come and they all bow before Joseph. Listen to what they say. God has found out our iniquity. God put his finger on them. God has found out our iniquity. Now these men, they're starting to face up to truth. Now let's look at something I find very interesting here. Out of all those men, they all knew they were guilty. God has found out our iniquity. Every one of those men knew they were guilty, except two. Benjamin. And yet now, he's charged with stealing the cup. Benjamin knows I'm innocent. All those men know he's innocent. He didn't steal the cup. They knew he didn't steal the cup. They all know he's innocent. So the test is this. They also knew that Joseph was innocent years before. They wouldn't stand by him. They turned against him. They all know he is the only innocent one here. We are the guilty ones. God has found out our iniquity. Now what are they going to do with Benjamin? That's the test Joseph wants to see. What are they going to do with Benjamin? Has God changed them? Joseph was pleasantly surprised. You know that. When Judah steps forward and he says, I became surety for him. I can't go back to my father. Now, I want you to notice something. He says, how can I go up to my father and the lad be not with me? We were talking in the home about this today again, too. Who's the lad? Oh, you say little Benjamin. Yeah, little Benji. You know how old little Benji was? The most he is 7 years younger than Joseph. And Joseph is 40. Little Benji is a 33-year-old man. How can I go up to the father and the lad be not with me? He's dealing with a man. And yet in the eyes of these boys is a big difference. What are the boys talking about? The boys are going back to the field when they sold a lad of 17. That's what's going on. And they had to go up to their father without the lad. And they're not going to do it again. God is dealing with them. So they come and they tell Joseph. Judah steps forward and he says, let me bear the blame forever. Make me your servant forever. Now listen, Judah knows that Benjamin is innocent. He knows somebody else did this. Maybe he suspects the steward did it. But he knows Benjamin didn't do it. And he knows he didn't do it. And none of his brothers did it. And yet here's what he says. I'll take the blame because he's being charged. Wow, that's a big change. A huge change from a man that wouldn't stand by an innocent Joseph 22 years earlier. And Joseph breaks. Time's up. More than up. But I'm going home tonight anyway, so you can't do much to me. Let me just finish with this. Now God turns the table around and says, I'm going to test you, Joseph. How are you going to treat these boys? Here's your chance to get even with them. Here it is. Now, you know he's not going to do that. Would you? I've seen brethren that wanted their pound of flesh. It's God has reversed this thing around. Now I'll get it right now. You're going to answer for this. This is what you did wrong. Do you notice what Joseph says? It was not you. After he says, I am Joseph whom you sold into Egypt. He's not glossing over the fact that they had a hand in this. But he's bringing the divine hand into this. And saying, it was God who sent me. He's showing them what he has learned. He learned it in Potiphar's house. He learned it in the prison. He learned it for the last 7, 8, 9 years as ruler of the land. What did he learn? That in all of this, God has had his hand. Now, brothers and sisters, if we don't see the hand of God in our lives, we're missing out. We won't get through. And God is testing Joseph. Will he forgive his brothers? Or won't he? He doesn't have to. He can put them in prison. He had the authority to take their lives. But then he would have failed. God is testing. So the tables completely turn around. And Joseph now has to act in a godly way. Let me just speak to you for a second or two about how we stand for truth. How we who say we're right stand against something that's wrong. These boys had wronged him. Does that give him the right to wrong them? No, it doesn't. He was in the right. They were wrong. But now, if he is going to act Christ-like toward them, he's got to watch out that he doesn't do it wrong. Then he will be in the wrong. Sometimes when we're standing for what's right, we stand in a wrong way. Now get me right, I am not saying that we shouldn't stand for what's true and what's right. But we need to be careful that we stand in a right way. That we don't stand wrong. That we don't sin in carrying out the truth. Joseph could have sinned here in carrying out what was right and what was true. He could have. Could have done it very easily. So can I, and I have done. But we've got to be very careful. Because it's not just about what has been done wrong. It's about how I'm going to handle what has been done wrong. And to handle it in a right way. And look at the way Joseph handles this. He has a hard time convincing these boys that he totally forgave them. He actually forgave them years ago. He wasn't living with this building up for 22 years. Because it would have just spilled out his bitterness after 22 years. Joseph had reconciled this a long time ago and was waiting for the day that he could let his brothers know, you're all forgiven. That's a wonderful attitude. That's what God was looking for in Joseph. That's exactly what he got. And he fell on their neck and kissed them. And he spent the rest of his time convincing them. And I don't blame you. I've seen the hand of God in this. And though you sold me to Egypt, you are totally, totally forgiven. God sent me to preserve life. You know, if we could see the hand of God even in our dealings with one another in the assembly, we're not perfect. The assembly is not perfect. There's problems in the assembly. People are not perfect. If you're looking for the perfect assembly, you're not going to find it. There are no perfect assemblies. I'll give you a little homework. You look at any gathering of any people anywhere in the world, saved or unsaved, and wherever you have a gathering of people, you're going to have problems. Because the problem is not out here. The problem is in here. And whenever you gather a bunch of people together, the problem resides within. And nobody is perfect. But it's how we handle the problems that makes us what we are. Now, God has given us the grace and God has given us the strength by His Spirit as He has gathered us together to handle every difference and every problem. One with another. And we need to start with forgiveness. Remember, life is a test. You remember the steward that was forgiven his great debt? Never forget that story. Because that's us. We were rescued from going to hell for our sins. Now God wants to see how we handle other people who sin against us. Do we take them by the throat? Or do we forgive them? Joseph, you can see God has been working in his life. And Joseph could see God has been working in his brothers' lives. You know, that's a wonderful thing to see. That's how he could fall on their neck and kiss them. He wasn't just sweeping everything under the table. He realized this. God has been dealing with these boys. God has dealt with them. God has changed their lives. Who am I? Yes, I'm second ruler of Egypt. But who am I to bring up what God has already dealt with? Right? Who are we? Let us be sensitive to the working of God in each other's lives and to the working of God in our own lives. Because remember, life is a test.